Welcome to New Human Living Radio Show, bringing you powerful interviews to awaken the power in you. Learn more at newhumanliving.com. And now your host, Les Jensen.
So, I mean, how can we verbalize the conundrum of the world? Are we in a conundrum or what? I mean, karmic tsunami, planet Earth, karmic tsunami, planet Earth, wet cleanup, aisle five. How could we describe the conundrum of Earth? I mean, certainly there's not there's so much heartache and suffering and turmoil and pain and upheaval and chaos and uncertainty and et cetera, et cetera. I could go on for a while, but what the hell? I mean, what's the Kool-Aid? What's the cocktail that we can drink metaphorically? In other words, what mindset, what change in our psyche is going to bring about the resolution of what ails us as a collective? What is that? Is there a single magic bullet, or is it a collage of things? I know a lot of people say, well, hell, God will save us. God's the redeemer. Is that the ticket? I hope you're ready, because we're going to have a fun show tonight. I'm thoroughly delighted for our show tonight, but I don't want to run away from that question just yet. What is there root elements? Is there core elements in our collective? You know, the notion of ego overdosing. Have you met someone where their ego is running wild, running free, and there's no semblance of any heart or soul in their persona? Maybe collectively we're suffering from ego overdose. Or maybe a masculine. Can you overdose on masculine? I guess you could. But certainly there's the idea of balance. I mean, if you look at the last several centuries or even beyond that, the masculine has been a prominent aggression. Would that be a fair term? Maybe we're overdosing on the shadow side of the masculine, because masculine in and of itself is not a negative connotation. No archetype is completely negative or completely positive. That's the nature of how it is. But maybe, just maybe, what we've fallen out of grace with is balance itself. Is balance itself. You know, when the women's movement happened, a lot of people could say, a lot of people have said that metaphorically the way women became equals is they donned masculine traits. The way the feminine, I was going to say, took their power, But I think a better sentence would be took power for themselves was to don the masculine. So a powerful woman might be the CEO of a company in a boardroom. A masculine masculine measuring stick, you might say. But tonight, let's start steering the rudder and getting towards the show, because tonight is directly related to everything I've said so far. We're gonna have one hell of a conversation, I think. The topic tonight is The Goddess Discovered, and our guest tonight is Shelly Kerr. We're gonna bring her on in just a minute. But what if the feminine returned to its glory? That's a easy word for me to use. The glory of the feminine, the grace, the power behind the grace. I don't know. We're going to have a fun time talking about it tonight. I think you're going to really like this episode, but I want to just pause here and give a shout out to some of the countries all over the world that listen to this show. I want to thank Iran and Norway and Turkey and Romania and Greece and Japan and Nigeria and Germany and Poland and Brazil and Colombia and France and many others. We're coming up on our 15th year now. And I just like noodling the nature of nature, contemplating the nature of consciousness on the show. And I want to thank you, the first-time listeners and the long-time listeners. What a journey it's been. All righty now, let's dial it in. It's time to get into it. Now, tonight's episode, The Goddess Discovered, is the name of our guest's, I want to say, latest book. I'm pretty sure that's accurate. The subtitle is Exploring the Divine Feminine Around the World. Exploring the Divine Feminine Around the World. And I tell you, this book is a magnificent piece of work. Oh my gosh, I've had hundreds of books cross the desk here at the studio, and this is one of the most impressive collections, one of the most impressive collections of really flat out culture, culture from around the world looking at the idea of the feminine. The Goddess Discovered provides more than 40 exercises and journal prompts designed to help you understand yourself at the soul level. You will also explore guided journeys that connect you with goddess energy and bring greater balance into your life, right? Balance. Balance with the masculine and the feminine. We were just talking about that. In meeting these goddesses, you can enliven ancestral energy within you, receive divine messages, and uncover past lives. Our guest tonight, Shelly Kerr, has worked with thousands of people around the world, an internationally renowned past life regressionist. Her method of combining energy work with hypnosis has been endorsed by numerous leaders in the field of consciousness. She's been on our show before, and I'm delighted to have her back. Her website is pastlifelady.com. Join me in welcoming Shelly to the show. Welcome to the show.
Les, thank you so much for having me back to the show. Congratulations on 15 years. This is fantastic. Your show is so wonderful and important, and I just kudos to you for 15 amazing years. Thank you.
We're not quite the 15, but we're coming around the bend. It's been a journey, I tell you. It's I'm humbled and honored to be sitting in this chair, but here we are. First off, before we delve into more of a detailed look of it, how did this book change your perception of the divine feminine?
Wow. It definitely totally and completely changed my perception as I went on an epic journey that took several years to put this material together. This book started out, a lot of the books that I put out recently were created during that strange time that all of your friends from all over the world, we all experienced it together during the pandemic when we were all locked up and we were told, hey, this is going to take a couple of weeks, and then we soon realized that a couple of years were going by. I had released an energy healing book, and I was scheduled in 2020 to go around the country teaching classes, and we all know how that worked out. So I had a group of students who wanted to take the classes online, and once we got done with that initial class, they said, well, what else can you teach us? What else can you teach us? And so we went on a journey, and just whatever they brought up, we put the classes together. And at one point, the book that came out in 2019 was about Egyptian energy healing. And I was always very fascinated about the Egyptian pantheon. And so we started talking about some of the deities, and I ended up writing another whole book series, really exploring some of the Egyptian gods and goddesses and how getting people in touch with those deities that they potentially worshipped in ancient times could help bring their past lives more fully into the forefront in their minds. And so while we were doing gods and goddesses, the students were really getting excited about exploring the divine feminine and the goddesses. And so I was thinking about, okay, well, let's just do a book just about Egyptian goddesses. And somebody suggested, what about a goddess book, like with goddesses from all over the world? And I thought, wow, you know, that would be so interesting. And so I started looking into it. And friends out there, before the show, I will admit, you know, Les was saying, how did you possibly put all this together? And I told him, you know, what I will share with you now. There were times going through this, again, it took me years to put it together, where I was just wondering if I was going to get to this side of this research, because it is so heavily researched. I went on an epic journey. I learned many things about the beautiful world that we live in, all the beautiful people and cultures all around the world. I feel like I connected with just experiencing the material, which is what I'm inviting readers to do, just connecting with pieces of my own maybe past lives that I hadn't explored before. And I also write books about ancestral healing. And so the other thing I started thinking about was, wait, places where I know that my ancestors lived in the past and the deities that perhaps they encountered there. And so, you know, we explore all these different places around the world. And then the second part of the book is where I'm inviting readers to dive into some of those explorations for themselves as you really contemplate the full nature of why we can really discover who we are by looking into different deities that our ancestors or perhaps our former selves have looked at, you know, in times long gone. So it was quite a journey, Les, to put it mildly.
Well, I can imagine, and I'm going to say this several times, I'm sure, during the show. Kudos to you. What a book. I'm very impressed. You know, we use words and we use sentences and we use paragraphs and occasionally a few commas when we and I forgive my editor forgives me but that's a linear context. I mean, we're our ego, so to speak, are exchanging words here, which are symbols. And yet, when I pray or meditate or whatever to God with a big G and goddess with a big G, goddess seems like this vast, multidimensional, nonlinear realm. And what I find fascinating is when we pass our history within a culture from generation to generation, sometimes it's spoken, sometimes it's acted out, but oftentimes it's written down in a linear language. And maybe what we're looking for, part of what we're looking for in the goddess is a nonlinear context of understanding. Did you get a notion? I mean, and perhaps were there cultures that had a more nonlinear view of the feminine, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I sense what you're saying. There is, you're right. It's a totally different vibration and feeling that you have when you're thinking about the goddess. And, you know, certainly the thing historically that many people are aware of is that back in the most ancient of times, you know, this book will cover, you know, ancient history all the way through modern living religions. So, you know, in the most ancient times, archaeologists are now uncovering and have uncovered in different parts of the world female figurines and goddess statuettes and things like that that suggest that the goddess, the worship of the goddess deities were far earlier than the gods. And there is a nonlinear, because I think it's because it's coming from the womb of creation, this nonlinear, warm, expansive, loving embrace that we think about when we think about the creative energies of the divine feminine that are literally the most ancient energies that were ever worshipped or acknowledged on planet Earth from what we can currently understand based on current things in archaeology. And again, because of our technology and the things that we're learning now about the world, you know, we're just uncovering more and more details about the past every single day. That's why it's a really exciting time to be alive, as we're just learning more and more about our origins and certainly the divine feminine. I totally agree, is a more nonlinear, you know, let's get out of the box that we put ourselves in and just be embraced with that warmth and that love. It's a feeling that I think is very primal and very embedded in our DNA and just carries us energetically back to the very beginnings of creation.
Nice. Well, I think a lot of the conundrum of the ego is, since it is a symbol processor, and if I sit here and I look at the studio in front of me, there's a microphone, a mixer, a keyboard. It's a three-dimensional world outside of me. And I think a lot of our conundrum is our ego's kind of like putting the goldfish in a fishbowl, and the goldfish grows to consume whatever size the fishbowl will accommodate. Maybe our egos grew in our noggins to accommodate every last resource of consciousness. And what I'm getting at is the ego's enamored perhaps with the world outside of us. We're looking at social media, we're thinking about what to do, think. And yet our heart, a nonlinear part of us, maybe the return of the feminine is going to kind of retract our consciousness from being so enamored by the world outside of us, and we move inside and put our consciousness, our awareness from within us to look at that divine spark or our, the vision of our soul or the passion of our heart. It's much more of a nonlinear realm there. Do you think the reawakening of the feminine is perhaps retracting our value and attention from the world outside of us and moving it back inside of us?
Wow. I mean, that's such a great point. I mean, you talked about thinking, that masculine linear thinking, and then the goddess is inviting us to feel, you know, and to,
right,
like you said, turn within ourselves. And I think there's got to be, you know, at the top of the show, you were talking about the need for balance, which to me has to be the message here. I mean, yes, this is a book about the goddess, but on the flip side, and I believe, yes, we need more of this feeling inward perspective of just being and loving and feeling rather than this thinking self that we've become. But we wouldn't just want to be all of that either. I think there's some balance here that needs to be created. And certainly, I think when the collective is turning towards the more feminine energies, there's something in the psyche that is craving that. Like I said, craving that connection with the truth that lies within ourselves, you know, rather than the external things, like you've so brilliantly mentioned, that are just tied to our egos and tied to things that really aren't even real. The real journey is with the self, which is turning our attention back within ourselves, within the creative power of the self.
I like that. If I think of the masculine as what has been created, like the things that I see outside of me. And then if you pray or if you use imagination, you're fishing in the infinite field of potential. You're casting your line, you know. It can be trying to resolve a problem. God, goddess, suffering on planet Earth sucks. What do you recommend? Or, and what I'm toying with here is the idea of balance, because so often we have the idea of, quote, heaven, unquote, as a place of arrival. We're going to heaven. We're creating heaven. But I don't think any static idea that, oh, we've arrived, now we're in heaven, and now we stop. It seems like consciousness in and of itself eternally wants another chapter. It wants another song. It wants another story. How does the divine feminine, when it comes into balance with the masculine, if the masculine, I guess what I'm saying is, if we were to pray and we get this idea either through our imagination or whatever, and here's a vision or an idea, for me, that's the feminine reaching into the field of infinite potential and clarifying or bringing into focus a particular aspect of infinity and bringing it into our consciousness. And then the masculine takes that seed blueprint and creates it in physical form. How do you see the divine feminine as a ongoing resource in the collective? Does that make sense?
It actually makes complete sense to me, and it's bringing up a couple of thoughts that I've had in the past that I think speak to what you're talking about. Earlier part of my career, I wrote a lot of books about gem and mineral healing. And so, you know, certain stones have different frequencies, and when we place them on the body or we wear them as jewelry, it shifts our frequency. And so different stones will then shift the energy to start attracting different things to you. So one of the things that seekers are usually always concerned about is creating money or creating, you know, wealth. There's different stones that can bring iterations of that energy, right? One would be more, it speaks to what you were saying, like there's a strengthening that can happen for somebody if they are, you're creating something, as you've mentioned, which you're saying, yes, and I agree, like that's coming from that divine feminine energy, that inward search to create the art, like you're a painter or you're a writer and you're creating this beautiful art. Maybe you're just doing it for yourself, but it's that masculine energy that says, wait a minute, this is pretty cool. I think I'll go out and try to sell this. And so that is what you're saying. It's like it's taking that artwork and putting it out, you know, at the art gallery and trying to sell it, you know. So it is the external version of the thing that was created through the creative divine feminine energy. And so there's different stones that can attract those things to you. The other thing that came to mind, back in earlier 2019, right before this, it was around April 2019, my birthday month. Yes, I'm an Aries. Okay. For those who want to know, they go, oh, okay, now we know why she's so weird. Yes, it happened. Anyway, so in 2019, I had a very profound opportunity to go to Vipassana, which is a 10-day silent meditation in the teachings of the Buddha. And nobody thought I could keep this big mouth shut for 10 days less, but guess what? I did it. It happened. And again, you know, the lives that we're leading in this modern time with all of these distractions and this media, and we got to put ourselves out there, and we're watching this show or that show or checking our status or whatever. It's just so ridiculous. And then to just shut all that down and go into a room where you're just told to sit on a cushion and breathe for 10 days, that's just, again, taking those outer distractions and just shutting them down on a dime starts to awaken that energy, which starts to peel away all the nonsense over the course of the 10 days until you just leave that place going, wow, this is the most beautiful feeling ever. I want to have more of this. I just think I want to go sit on a lotus flower now for the rest of my life. And so you could go, that's what I kind of meant earlier, like you could go into that land, which certainly that feeling of just having a lot of shakti move through the body when you're in this really great meditative state, it feels great, but at some time you have to kind of come out of that and go, you know what, okay, I've learned these lessons, but how I could give back to humanity more would be then to take that energy out into interaction with other human beings so that I can help do my part here rather than just sitting in a meditation chamber all the time. So we have to take those beautiful gifts, and we do need to express them externally. But then again, when the external gets to be too much, then we need to remember where the source of those things came from, which I think is similar in some ways to what you've described. I think you're exactly right with all that. There's, and again, we can't have too much of either in order to have the life that we're meant to live here, because we didn't really come here, you know, to sit in the meditation chamber, but nor did we come here to be so distracted by the nonsense and the loud noises outside that we forget who we actually are as souls and as divinity who has come here. Every person who's listening to this now, you know this, but we all have a purpose. You have a purpose that only you can do, and it's only in these quiet moments combined with the activity moving in the direction of those purposes that we all move to help and nurture each other. You know, we all came here together at this time for a reason, and we all have our little parts to play. And, you know, we may not understand what that is, or we may feel like, well, what I do isn't that important, but what you do is very important. You know, you just don't know how you affect others. And so there is that big balancing there, and it's a lifelong endeavor that I think everyone, including myself, finds very, very challenging and interesting as we continue to try to learn more and more and more how we can bring more of that into daily life.
Nice. Very well spoken. That was beautiful. Very nice. Well, maybe the feminine got jacked up, drawn out of its authenticity by the ego and thought, because I'm listening to you say about a 10-day retreat of silence. And after that silence, you felt this other aspect of you that was underneath it all. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but maybe the feminine is to step out of the busy mind and stay in that non-local space on a more regular basis. Would that seem right?
Yeah, I think to still the external chatter enough to realize that there is a very quiet space within. We all have that space. And I think that in general, and even I had thought this before, you know, people hear the word meditation and they want to run kicking and screaming down the street. They think that sounds terrorizing, you know. But I mean, even if we just close our eyes for a moment and just turn that focus within, you know, it doesn't have to, we don't have to say, I'm going to do this for 1 hour in the morning and 1 hour in the evening. Okay, just even if all we could carve out is a few minutes of that time, just to remind the soul and the self that there's something quiet there. I think something beautiful can emerge there.
Now, this is a popcorn thought in that what could our culture do if you look at our culture in a general way? There's individuals that go and meditate, and there's groups of people that go and meditate, but what practices perhaps could we introduce to our cultures that create a space for the feminine that's not like so labeled as spirituality? You know what I mean? It's like, because I think some cultures would get the community together. Every Saturday we meet at the common space and we share food and we share song and we share dance. We can certainly benefit from that now because we've been so isolated. To come together would be very beneficial. But if I were to look at the style of our culture now, what kind of practices could happen on a cultural or a community level that would bring about a more feminine connection with everyone involved?
That's a great question. You know, what's interesting, in the 20 plus years that I've been writing about these topics, you know, now in workplace or in really what I would call, with air quotes, normal periodicals, magazines, newspapers, media, et cetera, people do discuss and they do show more people doing yoga practices or, you know, doing some Tai Chi in the park and mindful breathing exercises and meditative practices. This is not as far out to most people as it used to be because more scientific studies have started to show the benefits of this, and so it's becoming more mainstream, which I think is really refreshing. I think one of the weird things about the pandemic, as you know, as everybody listening knows, is that when we were going through that, I think there's a part of myself, let's say, I'll just speak for myself, that you just think, okay, at some point, they're just going to turn off we're going to just stop this, we're going to open the doors, and everyone's just going to go back out, and we're just going to do things exactly how we used to do them, and we're just going to go back to the fabulous things we were doing. And you know how, like, when you lose something, you tend to, like, you almost make it better maybe than what it was because you're longing
right,
for it.
Yes.
And then you're expecting that it's going to be exactly the same. I'm going to open my front door, walk outside, and bam, we're back to work. Everything's good to go. But the thing is, we all know that, you know, nothing stays the same in this world. And during those years of isolation and the things that we did, we had to learn how to do things that we used to do. We had to adapt and learn how to do them in a different way. And so once we came back from that, we were not the same. And the world wasn't the same. And I think, you bring up a great point about, you know, it is a great time. It would be a great time for us to get together with other people, to actually go out and see each other. I think there's a lot of that going on, but I still think there's, like you see a lot of workplaces now where they're still not going into the office, and I think there's some of it, but we're still not back out completely because some people probably have gone in and kind of enjoy the virtual environment. So I think it's you can still have community online. I just think it's a different situation. So some of both is okay depending on, you know, people's nature, but definitely that connection that we had, I think, has definitely changed. And so it's something maybe to get back to for sure.
Right. Well, I'm looking at your book right now, and I'm just going to rattle off some of the cultures you looked into as it relates to the goddess. Ancient Near East, Celtic, Greek and Roman goddesses, Mesoamerican Inca goddesses, Norse, African, East Asian, Hindu, indigenous. Did any of these stand out as being markedly different than the rest?
Well, as the person putting all this together, going through each pantheon there's over 500 deities mentioned in this book. And then I'm really interested in world history. I had written another book called Past Lives and Ancient Lands in Other Worlds, where I do like a brief history of like ancient history. And then we go into some of the regressions that people had in these different ancient civilizations and things. So if that was more like a world history book, this one for me, as much as I enjoyed working, also learning about the deities, part of the really interesting part as the writer and the creator was just learning about the different religious histories in the most ancient parts of the world all the way through modern times, learning about the cultural aspects of it and then how the deities played into that. And what I was inviting people to do in the second half of the book is, again, just see how do I feel as I'm engaging with this material? This is what I had asked in my earlier book. As you're looking at different parts of ancient civilization, how is this making you feel? We talked about that in this program. Getting in touch with our feelings is how we awaken our soul to who we used to be. We get tuned into our ancestral connections in that way. And so as I was creating it, different groups, different world histories, different groups of deities would give me different feelings. So one of the ones that really stood out was the Celts, because I didn't really understand it. I was just, I just tighten up. I'd be, oh my gosh, this is terrorizing to have to address the Celtic deities. And you think about it, but there's so many fantastic books that have been written about Celtic goddesses. I mean, you know, first of all, but I say, okay, is it more about that? Like, you know, I'm not worthy, or is it? And I started to kind of have to ask myself, why am I having this feeling about just, oh my gosh, this is kind of almost scary? And then I started thinking about my ancestral history, much of which is from Ireland and the part of the world. And I thought, oh, you know what? There's just something about it. Yeah, maybe I just want to make sure I do right by these people. You know, I do right by the ancestors. It was just very serious, you know. Whereas I would have, if I hadn't really been really digging into it, I might have just thought, oh, this sounds like fun, you know. I mean, I think it's beautiful there. I love that culture. You know, it might be easy to do, but it was just very, very different. And then just some of the places that I hadn't really looked into as much, like, the Norse mythology just captivated me. I guess it's very interesting in popular culture right now. There's a lot of maybe Marvel comics and things like that are based kind of on Norse characters like the god Thor and Loki and the trickster god. You know, so you see a lot of this in popular culture, but I had never really dug into it, and I just fell in love. It was like falling in love with something that you just never knew you were missing. And so there was just a lot of this as I went through the book, just a lot of reflections, just different feelings.
When I think about the sequencing of this book, I'm pretty sure I haven't used that term before, but I just did. I really like how the book's laid out because you're taking us through these cultures. You're taking the reader through these cultures, experience, folklore, etc., of the idea of the goddess. And as you just beautifully shared, some of them moved you in different ways than others. And so as the reader reads through these cultural windows, so to speak, into the idea of the goddess, and then in the second part of the book, you invite the reader to connect with the goddess. And I think that's so brilliant to sit there and have this this variety of examples of what the feminine goddess has been perceived as. And then, like I said, you turn around and with the viewer, the reader, you're like, okay, let's get you on a journey. Let's get you into the experience of the goddess. What made you add that second part to invite the reader to have their own personal experience of the feminine?
Well, the thing is, you know, I mentioned earlier that the book came up because the students wanted, they wanted to study the goddess. They wanted this book about goddesses. And so I started looking at some of the other things that were out there. There was this beautiful author named Patricia Monahan, who passed away many, many years ago. She's got some of the best books. These are pieces of absolute brilliant scholarship that she had done. And I thought, wow, you know, I would only hope to ever even be able to begin to go where this woman went with her amazing research. And so there's that aspect of it that I want it to be a piece of scholarship. I want it to be correct. You cannot simply go out to the internet and just Google this and expect that all of this stuff is going to be correct. Believe me, I learned that the hard way. Thank you. This is a lot of research. So there's that aspect of what I wanted to do, but I still can't get away from the theme for me as the creator of it, and why I think I come to the material with a little bit of a different perspective than other people is, I'm sitting here with a group of students. They're going, oh my gosh, the goddesses. And I'm going, yeah, that really sounds interesting, but I'm still wondering at the top level, why? Why are we so interested in this? What is calling people to be so drawn to this? And I have to answer that question. And so I conclude that it's got to be ancestral, because there are studies now through the CDC, the National Institutes of Health, and other reputable organizations that prove that people can not only, that we do really carry not only maybe physical traits or illnesses or proclivities towards things from the DNA, but we can carry through ancestral trauma. That can be carried through. And so some of our behaviors, some of the things that we're doing really have been proven that they're coming straight through us from our DNA. And then, of course, because I do love past lives, I still believe the other place that influences can come from are the past lives. And so in that last part of the book, I have to ask people, you know, kind of like what I did in Ancient Lands, that was about world history. This is, again, about religious history, the history of world religions. As you're experiencing and engaging with the material, just inviting you to just, again, notice how you feel. So by the time we're ready to do exercises, you can pretty much say, okay, well, I wanted to look at the Greeks, or I wanted to check out, you know, the Mesopotamian deities, or whatever it is that you feel drawn to look at. And you can take these guided journeys that I've put in the book for you, and you can go encounter deities, you can visit past lives where perhaps you engaged or experienced some of the deities. And then I developed many years ago, I wrote a book in 2021 called Heal Your Ancestors to Heal Your Life, where I had finally published a technique that I developed back in the early 2000s called a genealogical regression. So rather than going on guided imagery to your past lives, you travel into the past to have visionary encounters with things that happened to your ancestors, obviously because it's a healing modality, most of which were not pleasant. And so you can then travel, and let's say you're just floating over, you know, it's usually, again, an illness, a death, a battle, you know, most of the time, not always, but we can, let's say we float over the battlefield and now we can send light to the ancestors who are there. We can identify them, and then we can start feeling a shift in our own energy as we send healing to things that happened to our ancestors. And so in that way, then I'm inviting people to, again, engage with the ancestral connections that you may have with some of these deities. And what's fascinating about doing that is I've never been one. There are writers who spend their whole career going and really digging to try to prove that this person really was this individual in a certain past life and things like that. But I've found it more valuable as a therapeutic modality. But the advantage to the genealogical work is that you could really go out on Ancestry.com or on one of the many sites, and you could really research things. And I've had students go on guided imagery, come up with names, and then go research those things and actually find them on websites, names that they got while they were in a trance. So you can actually, quote, again, air quotes, prove this a little bit more readily. And you can start to feel like, oh, okay, you know, if I'm engaging with things that my ancestors engaged in, there's a certain healing that comes from that. I think that we have a lot of judgment in this world about, you know, this is better than that and blah, 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 blah. I'm just one who has always believed that, you know, we've been all things, we've been all places, we really are all one, maybe not in this current life, but over this course of time, we really are interconnected. And the more that we can let go of that judgment and say, look, I don't care what religion you are right now or what you think you believe, there's no doubt that in the most ancient of times, your ancestors have engaged with these deities. So by going in that direction and honoring in that way, you're really honoring those who have come before you, and you're really bringing back and maybe a somewhat disowned part of the self, and there's a great healing in that.
Nice. I think there's a tugging in our soul, in our psyche, both individually and collectively. We've had enough of the pain and the suffering. We've had enough of the wars. We've had enough of, I don't need to go into all the abuse, but there's plenty of very, very ugly stuff that happens on this planet. I think we're hungry for balance, to return to balance. And I guess I would say that heaven's not a place where you arrive and park your ass and that's it. It's perhaps a balance, a place of balance that we find within ourselves, and then we live the process of creation as a modality. Maybe heaven is a modality of the persona. You know, we can't really, I guess I'd say part of the reason we're suffering the way we are suffering is we experience the world that we embody, in that if I'm embodying fear and anguish and grief, and I'm offended and I'm embodying those traits, the reality that I experience is a reflection of my inner space, so to speak. What I'm getting at is perhaps what will heal the wounds of the human psyche is to return to balance with our masculine and our feminine. And again, I'm very impressed with this book. We can't have heaven on earth unless we can embody the principles of heaven on earth. We can't sustain anything unless we can embody the principles of that which we seek. And your book is really a wonderful vehicle for the individual reader to re-embody, to re-experience, to rediscover what it means to have a healthy feminine aspect of your persona, if that makes sense.
Thank you. I just hope it's something that, you know, readers can use to help them explore in whatever way will make the most sense. I think there's a lot of ways that people can work with that. So.
Well, I'm very impressed with your book. And so an hour can go by pretty fast.
With you, it always does. Les, thank you.
It is my pleasure. Why don't you take some time now? You've written a bunch of books. We've been talking about this book. You work with students. You have a web page. Take all the time you need and share with our audience all about that.
Yes. Let's see. I've written quite a few books. If people go to PastLifeLady.com, you'll see my book link. Goddess Discovered was just nominated for a Coalition of Visionary Resources Award, along with one of my other books. And 2023, I had a book called Journeys Through the Akashic Records. It was the 2023 Book of the Year. It's got guided journeys to lead people into interdimensional doorways in the Akashic Records. It's based on work that I've done with people over the course of the 20-plus years that I've been doing this. And then in June, coming up June 8th, I've written a follow-up book to the book I mentioned earlier called Heal Your Ancestors to Heal Your Life. This new one is called Ancestral Energy Healing. And I am going to reveal a never-before-shared-in-public technique that people can use to go inside the body and connect with the energy that's in your actual cells, that's relating to your ancestors, how to send light into those areas. I'm very excited about this one. We're going to go through deeper genealogical regressions than the first one went through. But then again, I'm sharing, like I said, a very new technique that was kind of revealed to me over the course of time. So I'll be doing some events, a big one with my publisher, Llewellyn, coming up in June. So if you just hit the events page on my website, you'll check that out, hopefully. And the journey continues, Les, as it does for you, and you're 15 years. Oh, my gosh, that's so amazing. You're amazing, and this is a great show, and I thank you for what you do. It's a joy always to have these incredible conversations with you.
Well, thank you so much. It's been I want to thank you for being our guest again. Wonderful book. What a great job you've done with this book. I want to thank you for being our guest tonight. I've very much have enjoyed this conversation as well.
Thank you so much.
We've been talking with Shelley Kerr, and the topic tonight has been The Goddess Discovered, Exploring the Divine Feminine Around the World. We're not going to have a future that we can't embody. What we embody, we experience as, air quote, norm, our norm. And we're certainly going through a lot of chaos, and that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. It's not always easy. But the life we had before all this, 2019, I know it seems like several decades ago, I don't think we were embodying a lifestyle, a reality that really served who we are as personifications of the divine. We weren't really honoring the idea, maybe the divine idea of what the hell a human genome was intended to be. I think there's indicators that we haven't seen in our history. We haven't seen the true potentials of what a human genome, and let me clarify that term. You're a human genome. I am a human genome. Well, why the hell am I using the term genome? Well, because you don't have an emotional history with it. I choose the word human genome because you don't have an emotional history with it. And so when you don't have an emotional history with it, I can talk about it in new ways and you won't have an emotional reaction to what I'm saying. But the divine idea of the human genome, of what it means to be a human being. So riddle me this, Batman. Our Western science says that we're using 5 to 10% of our brain and that 5 to 10% of our DNA is active. Now, I'm no sproctologist, but 80 to 90% of our cells are offline. Offline. Have we seen an example of a fully actualized human genome? What if that dormant part of our DNA gets reactivated, gets realigned, gets brought back online? So our DNA gets upgraded, and then that dormant part of our brain gets lit up. I think we're talking about a whole different genome, so to speak. We're talking about a whole different, we got to throw all the academic libraries and throw it all in the trash in a sense that it has not described the fully awakened human genome experience, because I don't think anywhere in our folklore, well, maybe Jesus is that, or Buddha, or Krishna, or I think this next chapter of our human story, we've developed a hell of a hunger for a deeper truth. I think we want truth in a more blunt way, in a more direct way, in a more, we're tired of the sugar-coated crap. We're tired of institutions and agencies and religions skewing the fundamental truth, the truth with a capital T. If we were to discover that truth, through a genome that's been fully activated, all our DNA back online, 100% of our brains back online, the divine feminine within our persona is back online, where we've indexed, this is folly, what I'm saying is folly, we've indexed the infinite. Yeah, right. But if we heal the divine feminine, we're healing our relationship with the infinite. We're healing our relationship with our imagination. We're healing our relationship with our ability to manifest outside the context of the existing narratives that we experience individually and collectively. Well, damn, that's a whole different rodeo right there. That's a whole different rodeo right there. I don't think anybody on the planet can tell you what that looks like. And here we are at the doorway about to experience that. Some bitch, what a wonderful time to be alive. Wow, just wow. Wow. Well, I want to thank you, the listener. Here you are at the end of the show, and you've shown up for yourself. I don't care what country you live in. I don't care what social class you live in. I don't care what your history is. I don't care about what anybody else thinks about you. I'm talking to you. There's nothing out of your reach. There's nothing off the table. You're divinity personified. Damn. If you were to peek inside of you and see that divine spark, that portal of source consciousness that illuminates you in each and every moment, and understand that through that portal, any of an infinite variety of possibilities for your life can be seeded, inspired, captured, created, and manifest. How cool is that? How cool are you? Pure, authentic you. Damn. Damn, damn, damn. Well, we got some really nice shows lined up for you. And the theme of this show is to grow you, the listener. By listening to this episode, you, the listener, are more empowered in your life in the way that you see fit. Once again, thanks for showing up for yourself. Always a pleasure. Until next time. I'm your host, Les Jensen. You've been listening to a new human living broadcast. If you're a spiritual seeker, you're going to eventually bump up against your relationship with God, especially if you grew up in some of the more classic Western religions. Forgiven Sinner, God's Last Savior, is a spiritual book written for spiritual seekers to help them heal their relationship with God and more fully embody their own life purpose. Forgiven Sinner, God's Last Savior. Get your copy. I'm your host, Les Jensen. Thanks for listening. Until next time.